and welcome to Show Hoppers. Today we are covering The Regime, the season finale, episode 6, Don't Yet Rejoice. I am Mr. Sal, a high school science teacher, watching The Regime for the first time because it is new on HBO and Max. And I'm doing so with my co-host and former student, Kurt. And Kurt, you're in my world now. You want to survive, you listen to me.
What is that, the world of, like, chemistry?
Yes.
what would you apply, like, where do you think you could say that line that isn't in a school or in a lab?
Is it in a school or in a lab?
Yeah.
I was gonna say school or
lab. No, I took away both your answers.
I mean, does a volleyball court count as school?
Okay. I'm not necessarily. No. I wouldn't. I'd say that's a good answer.
All right. So, because I am a volleyball referee, so
now that
I've been a coach and I've been a player, so
now that I say that, I wonder where I could say that in like a Best Buy.
like technology. You're in my world now, Mr. Sal. I'd go along with that. Yep, you're right. I'm in your world now.
That's
I was in a Best Buy just not like last week, and I looked around and I was like, man, this doesn't even look anything like what Best Buy used to look like when I remember Best Buy opening.
I went to Best Buy last week, and man, I love walking around Best Buy. I love to just window shop in Best Buy and just look around at the stuff.
God, I remember I was it was just like all CDs and DVDs when it opened.
Not in my memory.
No, I know. But anyway, okay, enough about Best Buy. You're in my world now, the world of guessing each other's ratings.
Ratings.
All right, Kurt, I know that we didn't really have too many. We didn't have really many predictions at all about this finale. We were kind of perplexed as to how they were going to end this. I think you probably found some humor in the early parts before they got taken in, I guess, when they were just kind of roaming the countryside and she was like screaming for help and stuff. And she was just saying, you know, if I could just speak to my people or whatever else, or Nikki will get us an airplane. I think you probably were amused by that stuff. It got much heavier as the episode progressed, but I do think that you were probably a little underwhelmed by this, but not to the point where you disliked it. I don't think this was even your favorite episode of the season. I think you gave it a max 9, maybe even lower, but I'll say a 9 out of 10.
I don't think you gave it a 10, and simply because I think you felt like this is more a season finale, not a series finale. I think that's something you're going to say. But other than that, I think you... I think you gave it a 9. That's about your only complaint. I think you like the story that this episode tells and kind of what the whole series told, just you don't quite like the ending.
Yeah, I mean, I did give it a 9. I don't know if it's necessarily for those reasons. I'm fine with this being a series finale, not a season finale.
You are.
I am. I just don't feel like I need any more of this series, if I'm being honest.
I agree with you that this could be the end of this. Like, I don't really. Oh, okay. I gave it an 8, first and foremost. Gave it an 8.
Okay. All right.
-1 off the bat. I feel like this episode potentially would have been a 10 if this was just like an episode in the season or something else. Maybe
with Zubak dying?
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
no.
You have a finale. You could die in the penultimate. You could have big characters die. It doesn't have to be mid in the season.
Well,
it can be.
A big character is one thing. Big character is Agnes. She died in the penultimate. This is Zubak. He's like arguably a co-lead of this series.
That's fine. That's fine. But here's the thing. It's just, it feels like to me like a season finale so much. Like there's so much open runway that they could do another season. I don't think they should. Like, I feel like they've explored a lot. I guess now that Herbert's gone, you could just tell whatever story you want now with Elena and America or whatever the state of her country's in. But and this is labeled as a miniseries, so it's supposed to only be a one-off. So with them knowing it's supposed to be a one-off, I feel like the way they end it to me is just not as satisfying for a series finale. And I'm not saying I need answers to everything. Like, we don't know what happened to Oscar, the rest of the defectors. Like, we don't hear anything about that. I'm saying what?
Oscar, I mean, you're totally right about Oscar. Like, yeah. The thought crossed my mind. I was like, I wonder what happened to Oscar.
I wonder after the rest of the Tricky Trio. We saw Mr. Laskin. That was good. That's true. I like that payoff. But he was gone before the rest of the Tricky Trio left. Like, what happened to that helicopter ride? I'm sure they're going to be paid to suffer after she gets back at control. I don't know. I'm not saying I need answers to all of this or even direct answers. But, like, you know, this is the end of the series. It's not like – it's one thing when you leave ambiguity for the sake of, like, the interpretation of the viewer. But this is just more of, like, they just dropped it, right? They're like, okay, Oscar, Agnes died, so who cares about Oscar anymore? They're playing Helena, which is maybe the point they're trying to tell. But I can't –
you know – but what's interesting about that is that because I'm with you. I think these are flaws in the series, but I don't think it's because this is a series finale. Because I really don't want a season two. I don't need any more of this series.
So, I agree. I don't think they should have a season two.
But it is a flaw because they even showed in the previously on. They showed her lover talking about getting them out, and that wasn't even really broached here.
Agnes like snuck away.
I mean, it would have been nice to have why did they show that in the previous round? They weren't even going to address it in the finale.
Couldn't tell. Just to dangle the carrot in your face. But so,
am I dreaming? Did they show it?
I can't recall.
Okay.
I don't know whether or not they did.
I'm pretty sure they did.
It kind of annoys me that this is a series finale. Again, if it was a season finale, fully acceptable. I wouldn't even bat an eye to these concerns because there's always next season. And I'm not saying they should have another season or that I want the series to have another season, but I'm pretty sure it isn't going to get another season. It shouldn't be getting another season. So that just kind of leaves like a bad taste in my mouth. So I'm going to deduct the points for all those reasons. And then the episode itself, it's pretty good. There's some moments I really like. There's a lot of downtime I don't care for as much. But there's a, you know, like when they're basically when it's for the most part, when it's just Helena and Herbert, I'm not that into the series. Trekking and a lot of moments. There are some where I'm into it with just those two. Mm-hmm. For the most part, when it's just them two, they're just kind of predictable with each other. It felt like where I'm just not. For it being a season series finale, I'm just not very like at the edge of my seat watching it. Or you
so
know,
I'll push back a little bit because I don't think it was always predictable when, but that was just the two of them. I think in the last two episodes, because the second episode was the first time that you kind of saw them as a domestic couple. So I don't even think that was predictable. This episode, I guess, was kind of predictable.
I'm sorry if I misspoke. I meant this episode only. I'm not trying to reference any other episodes. This episode with them two together.
Okay, because I felt like their dynamic shifted in every episode other than this one. It was pretty much the same as it was in the previous one.
Yes. It didn't have that charm. But there are still some really good scenes here, though.
Yeah, and honestly, like that's, I think, one of the things I really like about the series is that their dynamic was so different. There were like five different dynamics between them in six episodes. That's pretty cool. I don't know that I've seen that to like really any place else or too many other places. So that was pretty cool. I will tell you, I think that there are two big flaws in the series that are, I think, very much exposed in this episode. I don't think the series really knew what it wanted to be.
I agree.
Or like there were times when it was very funny, and I think that I think they could have leaned more into the humor and it would have worked more. Or there were times when it was like almost melodramatic, like toward the end of this episode, and I think if they had leaned more into that, it would have worked more. I think they tried to walk a line between humor and drama, which I mean, we love humor and drama. Like we love Only Murders in the Building and Shrinking, like these are the Narva Bodger, like Mrs. Davis. We love this stuff. It's like our cup of tea, and I think they tried to do that here, and it just didn't work. There wasn't enough humor and there wasn't enough emotion. It was kind of like you're in the middle here in limbo between humor and emotion. And then all of a sudden you get some humor and you get a little emotion, but it's not enough.
I think the main problem is, and you can correct me if you feel differently, but I don't ever root for Elena or Herbert really ever
in the entire series. You're right.
And I think that's the issue, right? And every other series you're illustrating, you root for the protagonist or the person they're portraying as the protagonist. You know, even when you're watching series where there's like an evil protagonist, like the anti-hero Dexter.
Oh yeah, I mean we love Dexter, Ozark.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're following a person that's a bad person or bad people, but I'm still rooting for them because they've shown me the angle, right? Why I care.
You're 100% right.
But here, I really just. There are things to take away, but Elena just seems like a pretty terrible person to her subjects.
Yep.
And
yep.
You might
like
Herbert
seem
more.
Any better. No, I don't think
he's devout, right? So you might feel bad for him in that way that he's, but after some of the decisions he makes, he knows what he's part of.
He's such a loose cannon, though. It's hard to root for him. It's like, man, you don't want to say anything that's going to set this guy off because he'll just kill you.
And I think. I think that's the big problem with the series is that we really don't have anyone to root for. And so you just feel disconnected the whole time while you're watching it. Like, I think pivotal time, and maybe I am just projecting, but Hugh Grant's death, right?
Uh-huh.
If instead Zubak tries to overtake, like, that's the part where we might start feeling for Zubak right there. If he's been wronged by Elena. Yeah. And now he's trying to either get his revenge or do something for his country. Like, now that's a comeback story I can kind of root for. Right? Mm-hmm. I can turn on a character. Maybe I wouldn't have. I don't know. We don't live in that universe. But there's just nothing to root for. So
yeah, no, I agree with that. And I do wonder, like, what was the kind of the point of this series? What were they trying to tell? What story were they trying to tell? And I think that. A lot of it is, I mean, the podcast that goes with the companion podcast is called A Cautionary Tale. So I when you think about it in that context, when you look through that lens and view this as kind of a cautionary tale, there's certainly a lot of references to American politics, current American politics, that you could certainly look at and say, all right, I see what they're trying to say here. But it's not like it wasn't – I don't think it was heavy-handed in the – I don't know, maybe it wasn't on the nose enough for that, or maybe it was too on the nose. I'm really having trouble even deciphering it, because at the core of the series, which is only six episodes long, is just this relationship story between Elena and Herbert. And I think maybe that's what I'm having trouble with, because if the point of this is a cautionary tale, okay, there's plenty of things in here that I think we should, you know, take warning of, but really, like, it's just this messed up relationship that's just got no real, like, I don't know, there's not really any resolution to it. Ultimately, Elena has a choice at the end between Herbert and being back on the throne, and she chooses the throne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and he goes along with it, but it was so messed up along the way. You know, he's like choking her and she's slapping him. And like, it's a strange relationship to put on display. And I'm not sure what we're supposed to gain out of learning about this relationship.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I thought at first you were opposing the fact that it's like a love story in some way as an ending. But that's not what you're saying.
Nah, I don't care about that.
Like, and I'm not opposed to the ending being a love story. In fact, I won't say spoilers, but there is a series that we cover that I do like. And it turned it unexpectedly to me, at least, and I think to a lot of people, ended up being a love story, which I don't think anyone could have thought from
the might be. It might be my favorite series. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah.
You know what's funny? That's not even the one I was referencing.
Oh, really?
No, it was not. I'll tell you off the podcast. I think it's a big spoiler.
Oh, my gosh.
Which one it is.
Well, that's interesting.
Oh, but you're right. That is also another one that ends in a story.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with that. But the thing is, like, about – well, I'm not quite sure which series you're talking about. so that's interesting. Is it one we covered recently?
No, I wouldn't say recently.
Okay. No. Well, we'll talk about that another time. But like the one that I'm talking about, my favorite series, which I mean, I guess we don't want to give spoilers about that either, but because we are kind of talking about, if you've been listening along, you know what my favorite series is, but that did not suffer from the kind of line walking that I'm talking about. It's like, yeah, this wanted to be a dramedy, but there wasn't enough drama and there wasn't enough comedy. So there was a lot of just like quirky relationship stuff that I don't know. Anyway, it's I might have to drop this down to an 8 as well. We'll see.
Yeah,
so as we talk about it,
thinking about the rooting aspect, I think that's a real pain point for me. I wonder if Agnes, like if Agnes didn't die last episode and like at least got an attempt here, maybe
right,
this changes everything for me. I don't know, but I just feel I don't know. I just don't feel very connected to these characters in the finale.
Yeah. So I have mixed feelings about the use of like Hugh Grant and Martha Plimpton, who had their one Martha Plimpton's the senator, Judith. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they each had like one episode.
Well, she's here in this showcased episode.
She's she's very present. So, but like and when they were on screen, I mean, the series was elevated so much. So I wonder if they didn't need more like that or more of those two, maybe. I don't know. But I do. You're right, though. I found myself more rooting for, like, now I've forgotten his name. Singer.
Oh, yeah. Like, for, like, these conniving politicians.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, I was more rooting for them than anybody, especially Singer. Singer was my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Singer was cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I do think there's just – it's a very flawed series. This is definitely not one of my favorites that we've covered.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So, and I'll probably not really think much about it after we finish covering.
No, we might rail on it like we do with the Murder at the End of the World.
That's right. That's true. Anyway, having said that, like, Kate Winslet's amazing. Her performance is great. Hugh Grant and Martha Plimpton, amazing for the time that they had, but they didn't have much. There were definitely funny moments. I wish there was either more humor or less humor.
There was funny moments and there were some good dramatic moments. Like, yep, there's some good political drama moments in this episode. I don't really want to get into it because I suspect either one of these funny or political drama moments might be
the favorite scene for perhaps.
Perhaps. Do you want to go there?
I do.
Favorite scene.
All right, so let me ask you this, because I want to guess for you Laskin's interrogation.
All right, no, so let's settle this here. Okay, yeah, what is this apartment stuff scene-wise? So we get – so, okay, where do you count and end, like, the scene for
whatever you're referring to? So before Laskin gets there, that's its own scene. Okay. And then – once Laskin gets there, I didn't take notes this way. I took notes for every back and forth that he had.
I think technically there's a time jump between his his last talk with Elena when he brings like the mold container, but I counted that all as one scene. Honestly,
yeah,
just the way I do my notes, I normally do it based on location, so I counted this entire thing as one scene.
From really?
From them entering with Tomas to
is certainly your favorite scene.
I've separated it to the way you're saying it. Basically post Mr. Laskin and pre Laskin.
I think just Laskin, Laskin's part is one scene, okay. I think.
All right. Then you
so from the time he arrives to the times he gets shot, like that's one scene.
Okay. All right.
I think.
All right.
So are you on board with that?
I can agree with that.
All right. Well, then I guess that's your favorite scene.
I guess that's your favorite scene too.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, it's a good scene. So Just because I want to vouch for some other scenes that are on my short list. Tomas is hysterical. All right.
Love Tomas.
I wish you got more Tomas. I hope they do a spin-off series called Tomas. What a guy. He's drunk driving around the countryside. Into the now. Imagine this. You're drinking and you're driving. And his reaction is, oh, you too? And then you back. Takes him along, says some sweet nothings, right? They give him praise.
Oh my god. He draws the heart on the window.
Yeah, he gets him inside. He tells them, like, he kids with them in the elevator, gets him worried about the rest of his family and his non-existent family in the apartment, and ultimately he tricks them.
I know.
What a masterclass. So that was great.
That was my favorite scene up to that point. I was like, I don't think anything's gonna beat this.
No, that was so funny. Oh, that was so good. But
then they brought Laskin back, and I was like, okay, this can beat it.
The only other third scene I'll really put up here is the Emil and Elena scene, just because I think it's a good political drama.
It's great, and that was gonna be my pick if you made me split up the Laskin stuff.
Yeah, and I agree. Yeah, because these are such good political drama scenes, the Mr. Laskin and the Emil scene. Like, this is, if people have ever watched, like, House of Cards or stuff of this nature, like, this is where it all kind of culminates to, like, a big power move that it's like, I know they want that and they've resisted it, but now they can't, or whatever the situation is. Or, like we'll talk about here in the favorite scene, where Elena kind of sees through Mr. Laskin's ploy that he can't hold a legitimate government right now. Like, this resistance is on weak ground and can't just declare themselves government. And they need her word to do it. So you understand her leverage here.
It is a good illustration of just the fragility of a governmental overthrow.
It is. Like, oh man, a coup. I think it's really interesting coups because I forget the statistic probability, but once a successful coup occurs, it's like, you're 800 or maybe it's 8,000% more likely that another coup will happen in the next, like, it's probably not 8,000, but it's some high percent likelihood in the next, like, 10 years there'll be another coup.
Wow. Because
coup come in groups, right? Like, once a government takes over another government, suddenly if you whether it's the old government trying to oust this newer one, or they're just seen as unlegitimate, there's a lot of things.
Yeah.
Very shaky ground.
So that was very cool to see the Laskin stuff juxtaposed with the Bartos stuff. It was good. I suppose Laskin was working with the Westgate Resistance Army, right?
It appears, or he defected. Like, it looks like he is now. Whatever it is.
Well, he's dead now, but
you're right. Whatever it was then.
exactly. What was the name that Tomas gave? They call me the something.
I don't remember. I hope it's not over quotes.
Obviously not. I can't remember what it was because, oh my god, it was funny though. It was like some animal, like they call me the wombat or something. It wasn't wombat, but it was something like that. But that would be leopard. A good title.
Who knows?
It wasn't leopard. Oh, that would have been funny, but it wasn't. But that would have been a great name for the spinoff series, Tomas's spinoff series. Whatever he said he was, is some animal.
Yeah, then that's the spinoff series. But Tomas. Basically, these three scenes.
Yeah.
Buoy this whole episode.
Of course.
Absolutely. And that's my complaint, is that, like, these are really good scenes.
They are.
They are where my interest in the episode starts and ends. I mean, I don't know. I think we've already, like, the ending part is also interesting. When Elena makes her choice. When Elena makes her choice, that's also interesting too. But I just wasn't as vested in it. These three scenes are head and shoulders.
Yeah, oh no, I totally agree. I totally agree. But it's this Laskin stuff. When Laskin came in as the interrogator, I was pretty excited. I have to because Laskin and Singer, those two are just like, I feel like without them, the series would not have been nearly as enjoyable as it was. So like they really added a lot to the series. So I was glad that they brought at least Laskin back, even if Singer couldn't come back. So when I saw him, that was exciting. But then the interrogations were really cool as well. Did you watch? Of course you didn't. I'm going to ask anyway. Yes, the vignettes. No. Okay, because he talked about I can't remember exactly what piece of culture he had been talking about. It was a documentary about interrogations during wartime, and he talked about doing exactly this, you know, going back and forth between two people. You separate the two people and you go back and forth between them, and you play one off the other and so forth, and you tell them that the other one is about to betray you or has already betrayed you and so forth.
This is literally like the prisoner's dilemma-esque stuff. Yeah, here.
Yeah, exactly. And I enjoy it. It's fun. That's a cool thing to watch, right?
Well, not only the way they did it, because they didn't show us all the answers, right? Like, he posed to Zubak, oh, she betrayed you,
right?
Tell me now. And then it cuts away, so we don't know from our perspective if he did cave,
right? That's true.
So they, I think I liked their choices there.
That's true. I mean, it, you know, how many times did Elena say in this episode, I would never betray you?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, that's the card that Laskin plays here to try to turn him on her, is she betrayed you.
I know, once she'll do it again.
Yeah, exactly. So, and which, you know, that also looms, you know, she has done it. She imprisoned you, although, you know, she imprisoned you after you, you know, choked her out. So.
Yeah, but she said mean things.
Oh, I forgot about the mean things. Oh my goodness. Yeah. But anyway, I'm always going to enjoy an interrogation tact, you know, thing scene like this where they're going back and forth between
You should
the
know
two.
Me. I love a good interrogation.
You do love a good interrogation. Okay. I remember there was one in Outer Range where they did the exact same thing. They separated the two people, mm-hmm. and they just played them off each other. I'm saying it was an Outer Range, but it's certainly in lots of other things too. So
it's a good tactic. I'll keep it in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I looked it up. Tomas is known as the Rooster. That's right. Yes. So that's the name of the Tomas spinoff series, The Rooster.
The regime, The Rooster.
That's right. Anyway, all right. So Laskin comes in, separates them. Elena has read the list of her crimes. And Laskin, I love this part of this scene. This might be my favorite bit of the Laskin interrogation scene, when he just gets in her face and he's like, I tried with you. I tried all these things to get you to see reason, but no, you're too dumb and greedy and everything else. Like, it was like he finally got to vent to her about how about how crappy his job was for all those, to all the time that he was with her. So
gotta be therapeutic.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, and certainly cathartic, if not therapeutic. But anyway, he goes to Herbert and he says, "Oh, she betrayed you. This is what she's done to all of us. She's held us captive to her love," which I guess that was a big theme of the series, was, you know, and I bless our love always, and the idea of her love. She loves her people. Her people, you know, allegedly love her. She, you know, the Herbert and her have this weird love thing. But anyway, held us captive to her love. And he wants Herbert to renounce her publicly to save himself. Which, knowing what we now know about Laskin, that he actually needed these two to play ball in order to stabilize this revolution, that does paint the whole thing in a different light. So if he gets Herbert up there renouncing her, if Herbert's going to renounce her, then the rest of the country, it should be easy for the rest of the country to not renounce her. But Laskin then goes to Elena and says that her ox has deserted her, and he wants her to confess on TV. So again, if he can get her to confess, then it really just eliminates that faction, because she's right. And she knows, you know what, for whatever else you want to say about Elena, she had at least this much political savvy to say, you know, no, I'm not doing that. I think that you need me because you don't have enough support. Yeah. I've got these factions and, you know, whatever the places were there, she had these pockets of support. And she was right. But yeah. Yeah, but she caves when he brings in the black mold.
She is, I guess, not really shockingly anymore, but especially early on in the series, I should say, a lot more politically savvy than I had given her credit for. She's very politically savvy and understanding her position in a lot of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess that was her early in this episode when she was like mourning the loss of her regime and
right,
just get dragged away. But
yeah, but the black mold thing was also pretty hilarious.
That was kind of funny.
It's clearly an oxygen tank. with the words black mold handwritten on it.
That is so
funny. It works. She caves, and so she goes, she's gonna go along with him, but at the bottom of the elevator, everyone but Elena gets shot. Elena gets taken, and Greta looks on smiling. Do you remember Greta?
No. Saw her when they showed her, but where is she from?
So when Tomas first took them into his apartment.
Oh, is she the neighbor?
She was the neighbor that was staring at them.
That makes a lot of
Tomas
sense.
Called it in to the Westgate resistance. Yeah. And Greta called it in to Elena's people. Or whatever Emil Bartos' people were.
Oh, look at that.
Because she looks quite satisfied when they take Elena away.
Okay, so she's the neighbor. That makes a lot of sense, because I was wondering, what's the point of showing the neighbor and then Tomas going, yeah, I trust her. Makes sense. All right.
That was the point. Yep. Incidentally, do you think that he's called the rooster because he...
He laughs first.
What am I trying to say here? No, not last first.
Not last.
He announces, I have Elena here. Because a rooster is like the herald of morning, like calls in the morning, lets everybody know that morning is here.
I think
he let everybody know that Elena is here.
I think you do not take it. You're not taking it literally enough. I think every morning he gets up and he cock-a-doodle-doos
maybe
neighbors awake, and so he's called the rooster.
The rooster. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, that's our favorite scene. I think that was a reasonable pick. Do you have anything else you want to add about that scene?
No. I think it's a great, it's good comedy, and it's good interrogation, good political drama.
Okay. Awesome. Let's play a little game then.
Who said it?
Kurt, I have three quotes for you.
Okay, and I have three answers for you. What order do you want them?
the wrong one, and then you can have the correct one last to save some face.
All right.
Okay. All right. I'll start with what I think is the easiest one, and we'll take it from there. Okay? I think this is the easiest one. Here it is. First quote. I am your man.
Is this a trick? What? I am your man.
I am your man.
I'm obviously off the rip. I'm thinking Herbert, but what's the name of the first driver? It's not that guy. But maybe it's Tomas. Me and Leto think says that Mr. Laskin doesn't say that. I'm your man.
Yes.
So it's either Herbert or it's Tomas say this. Obviously, if Herbert says it, he's saying it to Elena. If Tomas is saying it to Elena, Herbert, I'm going to go with Tomas to Elena and Herbert.
Corporal, my corporal, I am your man.
Let's go. You're right. I do remember that now that you say corporal.
Yes, corporal, my corporal. I am your man. I love Tomas. We already talked a lot about him. We don't need to say a ton more, but it was some of the best comedy that they had series.
I wish he was a reoccurring character.
I know.
This was like the... Man, like, so when I saw Tomas, I was like, you know, this could have been like throughout, kind of like a cold opening, right? They just show us like how how the common man or common woman's doing.
And it's always Tomas.
Yes, Tomas, whatever Tomas is up to, right? So like maybe he's at like the bar or the pub or whatever they call it, and
yep.
chatting with them about the current government policies that have been enacted yeah. with like this cobalt mine stuff. Or maybe it's him at work, you know, just that could have been so funny now that I see Tomas here in the finale. I go, man, I would have loved that. So and then this is like the coming together of that. Oh, what a payoff.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you might know where his allegiances lie if they did that, but they could have done it in a benign enough way.
They could have.
Although, for 5 episodes, we would have been saying, what's the deal with this guy in the beginning of all these episodes? What is he supposed to be?
No, not if it's so. Well, you're right, if Zoe's a reoccurring guy. That's true. We'd be yeah. curious, but then here's the payoff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, exactly. It would make it worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. But anyway, they fail to commandeer Gregor's car. But they get this drunk guy, Tomas. He is their man. It is not a smooth ride, but they get to his apartment. There is some tension as they wait in the car. And I don't know if I don't think either Elena or Herbert had a thought that he was going to betray them. Because, I mean, Herbert says, you know, this is not going to work. He's going to mess it up. But mm-hmm. like on the radio, they're talking about the reward for turning them in. So I, at that point, I was like, I think he's going to betray them, because they've let us hear this thing on the radio about a reward. But anyway, he appears to be in love with Elena. You know, he like blows on the window to make condensation and then draws a heart. It's really, really funny. They've got Elena's disguise is pretty hilarious. And she's got glasses and like a beanie, and she actually looks very different.
She does.
Than she does as Elena. But Greta does see them on the way in. And somehow he nicks Herbert's gun and locks them in a room. He tells them the phone's in there. They go in there, and he locks them in and is very excited, very happy, very critical of them. And it certainly is getting out everything that is the opposite of what he was saying before. So, and he calls it in. He's thrilled to be the one that turns them in because he hates them.
Go Tomas.
Yes. All right. You are one for one, Kurt.
Thank you.
You ready? Ready for quote number two?
Yes.
80 words of drunken drivel about a pussy willow.
What the heck? Oh, man.
That's a very specific
quote. It is. I mean, it sounds like something Elena would say, but I'm just thinking through the context. Say it one more time.
80 words of drunken drivel about a pussy willow.
Maybe Mr. Laskin. No, but that was the favorite scene. You used the Mr. Laskin stuff.
Nope.
Emil maybe says that. Does Nikki say that at the very ending? Oh, yeah. I know I said one more time, but now one more time. I think of Nikki saying it.
80 words of drunken drivel about a pussy willow.
No, Nikki doesn't. I don't think Nikki says that. So if Nikki doesn't say it, Mr. Laskin can't say it. Emil, I don't think says that. So it's either Herbert or Elena. And I don't know where this is said. Was it 80 days?
80 words.
80 words. I think that's not a phrase I expect Herbert to say. I wonder if he says that to her when they're in the like abandoned poetry store. The abandoned poetry store. It's the abandoned poetry store. Who's the one that I think it must be Elena reads the excerpt from one of the books to Herbert.
Okay. So are you guessing Elena says this to Herbert in the poetry center?
Oh, man, you're scaring me. Is it the other way around? Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you got it. That's right.
Thank goodness. All right.
Yes. And so this is one of the poetry centers that Nikki's been talking about all season.
Yes.
It's one of Nikki's poetry centers. Yes. So these, you know, this was his pet project, get these poetry centers up and running. But there's no food in it. There's no water in it. There's just all this poetry, which Elena considers to be a useless genre. 80 words of drunken drivel about a pussy willow. Why I picked this quote and in the scene is because this is where Zubak kind of calls her out for hesitating to make him chancellor, and he's suspicious that she ever was going to do that, and she has to try to convince him that I would never betray you, even though she did have him locked up for 3 months listening to her voice the whole time.
She should be saying, I would never betray you again. If I was Zubak, I would demand she adds that addendum.
I guess, is it a betrayal to lock him up for 3 months after he tried to choke her?
I think so.
It did feel like a betrayal in that scene.
Leading up to it, I think there was already a betrayal. Like, she obviously, you should not have choked her, but
right,
she knows how angry he can get, and she was like goading him.
Yes, she had punted him down the road.
Yeah,
she
stopped listening to what he had to say.
Yeah,
which again, it doesn't justify choking her, but
sure,
she did already betray him at that point.
You can see why he would have felt betrayed.
You can see why you can see why he choked her.
No, but you can see why he felt betrayed.
Yes,
like,
yes,
being
yes.
called a butcher and an ox, and he thinks like a baby. He's just got baby dreams.
You love me, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't want to F you, but anyway. So this is kind of at the core of this episode, the idea of he is devoted to her, but he is worried that she is going to betray him again.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, you are 2 for 2. On to the last quote. You ready?
Yes.
And suddenly we're back to the old relationship.
Hmm. This is presumably the hardest one, or have you just hit me with a softball here? I mean, okay, so I think you're goading me into picking Nikki and Elena. That seems too obvious. So I think you went with, say one more time.
And suddenly we're back to the old relationship.
Suddenly we're back to the old relationship. I don't remember this verbatim, but Emil does say going back to like American relationships, or, you know, American ties versus how Elena has kind of severed those and tried cozying up to China. But I think Emil says it to Elena in their one scene in this episode.
They only have one scene together. Yeah. Yes, that is right. You got it. 3 for 3. Good job.
Were you trying to trick me?
I mean, I thought it would be difficult. I wasn't thinking you would think it was Nikki and Elena, because who would have said that?
I mean, that's what I was wondering. I mean, maybe Nikki says that.
I don't think either one of them would have said it to the other one.
I could see Nikki saying that.
Really? I would think that he would be too afraid to piss Elena off.
He questioned her about the whole her wobble.
Wobble, that's what she called it.
He's a little more confident now, right? He's back in sway. America's fair enough. Check.
Yep, fair enough. So anyway, this would have been my favorite scene if you didn't let me lump all the Alaskan scenes together. And so I wanted to get a quote from this scene in here, because Elena is taken to Emil Bartos. Now, last we saw of Emil Bartos, he was getting beaten into a pulp by Zubak after he choked Elena.
Yeah.
So this is a very violent night, but we haven't seen Emil Bartos since then. We don't really know what he's been up to or what the relationship with Elena is like at this point. But he also has Zubak, just in a different room. But he's on a call and he tries to convince her that China is out and America is back in. And she can even be back in if she plays ball, because America will throw their support behind her and that'll be enough to put her back on the throne. But at that point, she is the meat puppet that Singer and Schiff were talking about in the previous episode. So it is Judith on the phone. She's on the line. Martha Plimpton, love that. But of course, the thing is, all this is contingent upon Herbert has to go.
Herbert beat up the wrong guy.
That's right. So he gives her time to freshen up and make peace with it, because it almost doesn't even seem like she has a choice. He basically tells her, this is what's happening. Like, this is the only choice. You can die or you can do this.
He didn't listen to him. He said, it's your choice, of course.
Right.
Something of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what the choice would have been if she didn't accept this offer. Is it just release her back out into the wild and...
See, this, I thought, was such a good comeuppance, I guess. Like, just
it was.
It's a good payoff, right? It's your, and you see this a lot, too, in, like, I'm trying to think of other forms of dramas. You probably see this as well, but in political dramas, mm-hmm. the idea that one, kind of like the story of, like, the lion and the mouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that story?
I do.
Like, yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's an Aesop's fable, right?
Is it? I don't know.
I think so.
I just know, like, listen, lion's trapped, mouse saves. Oh, wait. No, the lion doesn't eat. Well, you know what? I give it up now because now it's not like the lion and the mouse, I've realized. Okay. Everyone scratch that. It's not like the, it's maybe kind of similar, but not quite. But basically, you see a lot of the times where one character will take advantage of the other character because of their position of power. In this case, Zubac beat up, Emil, because he could, he was powerful enough to, I guess, and not get killed by him. But because he's done that, now Emil's on the stronger end of things, and he will get his revenge.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. So this ends up being a not very happy ending for pretty much everyone, except maybe Emil Bartos.
Yeah, in America. Yeah.
Maybe America. America wins again. All right. But
Fine winning.
Exactly. But yeah, so this is a very cool scene. I didn't realize where it was going until it went there. I was like, is he gonna kill her? Does he want her
to be leader again? I thought when he was propositioning about like a strong familiar face, I thought he was saying himself. Like, make me leader. I was like, oh man, he's going for the money and the power now.
Right. Right. Either him or maybe Zubac. That was a thought I had too when he said a strong, familiar face. But it's certainly unexpected. I was expecting one of these two to die, Elena and Herbert, in this episode. Throughout the course of the week between the penultimate and this episode, I was like, one of them's got to go, right? Like, there's no way they both survived this. So that part I expected. I was not expecting Elena to end up back in power.
Me either. Yeah.
Yeah. Although she's not really in power. So she just does what the Americans want her to do and Emil Bartos wants her to do now.
Way it goes.
I suppose it is. All right, Kurt, that's our game. You were 3 for 3. Congratulations. Let's move on to the rest of the recap.
I just want to soak this in for a little bit. An unchallenged 3 for 3. I see that too frequently.
Yeah.
So going into the recap here, I see we have like a lot of scenes discussed in a row.
Yeah, me too. Well, it's going to be a big jump.
It is.
Huge jump, in fact.
It is.
So the beginning of the episode is, I think, clearly the weakest part of the episode. They pop up in a corn or sugar beet field. I like to think that these are sugar beets because that was such a big point of focus, point of emphasis in the early episodes with sugar beets. So I like to think that's what this is. Maybe it's corn. I don't know. Anyway, Elena wants to go back. Herbert physically talks some sense into her. Like, manhandles her a bit. We're not going back there.
You can't.
Yeah. You're in my world now. You listen to me. Elena is frantically trying to figure out how to get a phone To China, perhaps. She's thinking maybe that would be the safest place for her. Herbert is just trying to survive. So, China's over there, and we are here.
So
no.
I want to pause you real quick, because this just made me think of something, which is, if you lost your cell phone, can you call anyone in your life from your from memory, their phone number?
Yes.
Okay.
Several people, in fact. But
wow,
you know, I'm a generation that used to have to remember phone numbers.
I had to a bit when I had to before I had my own cell phone. So yeah. I have memorized both my parents' old numbers. They've both changed. My old home number, which is also no longer, like, that's from a long my time goodness. Ago. And my sister's old phone number, but she got that changed also a long time ago.
So you know you have none, then?
The only number I have memorized is the school I work at.
Well, that's something.
So I take solace that if something ever were to happen to me, I could try to call into a
to the school.
And okay. then go from there. But that's all I'm writing on right here. I do not have any other numbers memorized.
No. Okay. I know the phone number for our local police department, our local fire department, my wife, my son.
When you
my
say brother. That, do you mean the non-emergency line?
Or not 911. Like, I know the actual phone number. But
do you know what 911 is in Canada?
No.
All right. Okay. Some people say 911. Yeah. Because that's what it feels like it should be.
Yeah. I have no idea.
All right.
But. Anyway, my wife, my son, my brother, my mother, my father. I think probably that's it.
Man,
okay. I do not know your number from memory.
Oh, I'm offended. I should say I do know my own number from memory. So if someone had my phone, I could call back my phone. I do have that going for me.
Wonderful.
Listener, if you can answer that question as to what is 911 in Canada, email us, shelterspodcast@gmail.com. In fact, if you don't live in the U.S., what's your emergency number? Is it 911? I could probably just Google it, but like, I'm sure some places are like 999, maybe 987. I don't know either. Maybe they all are 911. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't.
No one. But maybe we could be the first ones to know if you tell us.
I doubt that very much. But okay, so Elena doesn't have a phone. She's frantically trying to find one. Herbert is just trying to survive. It rains flyers that are promoting the Westgate Army, and Elena decides to try to get Nikki to help them. They are wandering the countryside, hiding behind a house. There's a corpse and whatever else, but the army drives by, and they give a curfew warning. So we now know there's a curfew. They find shelter in the Poetry Center. We already talked about that. They fail to commandeer Gregor's car, but they get Tomas's. We already talked about that. We talked about everything at Tomas's apartment. We talked about everything right after Tomas's apartment with Emil. And so now we're in the shower with Elena. Actually, before she gets in the shower, she takes her wig down and reveals patches of missing hair, it looks like.
Yeah, you're right.
So I had suspected that she'd been wearing wigs, but because sometimes her hair just changed too quickly.
Yeah.
But this was a little jarring. You wonder if Herbert knew about this or not, or if Herbert caused some of this.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. If he caused
yeah.
it. Yeah. It's like, you know, this is actually an all right. I mean, for how the length of the scene, it's an all right scene. We see how weak she kind of is this moment. And then, the very next scene, she's kind of back to her, like, prepared face.
Yep. So cleaned up Elena visits Herbert, and she's very cleaned up here. And she's honest with him, except about the part where he is out, right? She tells him that Emil has propositioned, you know, basically let America take over and I'll be the figurehead. But she never tells him that he's got to die. She tells them that they'll play along and then counterattack. And I don't know if you got this impression too, because Herbert gives her a look like, yeah, okay, whatever, I don't believe you. And it reminded me a lot of the scene with Ed, where he says, "And we'll give it, yeah. And we'll cut the Merrick out too." And she's like, "Yes, of course." Right, yes. right after we do all this other stuff. So you can kind of see her politicking and him not buying the BS. And he says several times throughout the episode, like, don't sugarcoat it for me. Don't try to pull wool over my eyes. He can basically tell when she's full of it, and he can tell here. But anyway, she sounds a lot like Ed, I think. But they lay together one last time, and they're glad that they found each other. He can sleep now. And she's scared, probably of getting blood all over her as he gets shot in bed. But I assume that's exactly the way it went down, that after he fell asleep, she got up, and then they shot him in the bed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they kind of mix it into, like, a dream, or like her waking up in her bed back.
So
in the palace,
I was really concerned because she wakes up in her bed at the palace.
Me too.
There's been so much talk about dreams in the series.
Man.
I was like, this is all a dream. I
didn't go that far, whether everything was a dream, but I was like, Herbert's, like, is Herbert still alive right now?
Right.
What part was the dream? What part wasn't? I was concerned. I'm glad how they ended it. To just
me too, because I did, you know, it could have been misconstrued as the whole thing was a dream, or Herbert never existed, Herbert was a dream, or he didn't get shot, or whatever. But we have confirmation by the end of this. So she wakes up in the palace. Nikki is back with his lovely, luscious lady, and it is her 9th victory day. So it's been 2 years since the start of the series, and she gives this speech from this glass box, which is really kind of...
It's beautiful.
Well, it reminds you of...
Nice things in glass boxes.
Right. Dead daddy, dead Herbie, and now her, alive. But if the glass box is a symbol of preservation and death, I mean, that's kind of what's happening to her here, right? She's preserved. She's not actually dead, but she's not actually Chancellor and really living her own life here either.
That's true.
Yeah, she's trapped. She's mostly dead. She's just playing a part here. But the speech is from the glass box, and she says, "From here, we can look back on our past divisions and turmoil, not as mistakes, but as opportunities for learning, opportunities for healing and for growth." And she also blames Keplinger, China, and the cabinet for the Civil War.
Wow.
Everyone but her.
Well, it was kind of their fault.
I guess so. But at any rate, she does pull this whole, you know, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger thing, which I'm not a huge fan of. But, you know.
And she loves them.
That's right. And I bless you, and I bless our love always. But what the last scene that we get is her leaving flowers on Herbert's preserved body. So Daddy got dumped over the side, and it looks like Herbert has taken his place. I wonder how Nikki feels about this.
Nikki's not allowed down there.
No, he probably doesn't even know about it.
Big palace.
Yeah, it definitely is. Not as big as the severed floor in Severance, though.
Oh, and you should check that out.
Yes, you should.
I don't know what
episode's
out right now, but that's the series running parallel to this. Where?
Well, we just dropped episode 5 this week.
All right.
So.
That's 9 episodes total. Season 1, season 2 coming out at some point in the future, probably within the year.
Yeah.
Within a year, I should say.
Mm-hmm. And actually, we had a pretty lengthy discussion in episode 4 of Severance about this concept of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and the problems that go along with that. Because it's really used as a weapon in Severance, and there's a bit of a weapon here as well, so some weaponizing of that expression. But opportunities for learning, opportunities for healing and for growth, healthy ways to take it, but not healthy to dictate it to someone else.
Yeah.
that's my take on this. You know, if you have been through turmoil, it is a healthy attitude to take that you're going to try to learn from it, heal and grow. It is not healthy to tell other people that they should learn, heal, and grow from turmoil.
Yeah, I don't think you can't from all turmoil.
You can't. I mean,
yeah.
There are some deep scars here in this country that are not going to heal easily. But all right, well, Kurt, that's the whole recap because we already covered everything else. So a big chunk of the episode was the Laskin stuff, the Tomas stuff, the Emil stuff,
the good stuff. Yeah,
yeah, the good stuff. I guess it's time.
Well, wait. Ahead. When you eat a nice dinner. Let's say you've got like the steak, you've got like mashed potatoes. I don't know, maybe like, what else do you have?
Steak, mashed potatoes. How about some? I like asparagus. How about some asparagus?
Okay, there's asparagus. What are you eating first?
A little bit of everything. I work my way around the plate. I don't just focus on one thing.
Me as well.
Yeah.
All right. That's all.
Wow. That's some some good stuff. Very relevant.
Analysis.
All right. Oh boy. Well, but you know, before we check the time, I did also want to mention, because you said eating steak and stuff.
Yes.
She's
not so bad now, huh?
This is Victory Day, her ninth Victory Day, right? Yeah, that's right. Not very good. Thank you for the segue. So, because I'd totally forgotten about this, and I did want to talk about this. So actually, good job bringing up the steak thing.
Yeah, I know, I know.
Because on her seventh Victory Day, which is where we started in episode one, they were supposed to be having salmon, and she said, no, I want something. The salmon is meek. We need something like more meaty, like, you know, beef or something like that. But in this scene, this last scene with Nikki, she's asked, you know, if salmon is still okay for dinner tonight, and she says it's fine.
Oh,
so it's fine to be meek. It's fine to cave to the Americans. She
feels meek now.
Oof. Because I really like that, because in that first episode, I did feel like there was a possibility that she rejected salmon because she knew that's what the Americans wanted. That it was the businessman who was trying to make a deal with her for the cobalt mining rights, right? He says later on, that businessman does, that they only eat fish, they don't eat meat. Mm-hmm. So I think she knew that, and she intentionally took fish off the menu. But here in this final episode, salmon is fine.
All
give them
show.
What they want. Yep, give the Americans what they want. We can be meek.
How do you eat your steaks, listeners? Let us know. Jawpodcast@gmail.com. You eat the steak first? You go around the plate. Maybe you eat all the asparagus first.
How about steak or salmon?
Steak. That's a no-brainer to me.
It's not a no-brainer to me.
I'm not a big fish guy. Even though I do like multiple forms of fish, salmon is not one of them.
If I'm cooking, I'm cooking the steak because I just find it easier to cook. In a restaurant, it depends on how it's prepared. It depends on the cut of beef. It depends on what else it comes with. There's a good chance I go for the salmon. But fair. I don't mind seeming meek.
I eat the entire cow.
All right, Kurt, let's check the time.
Ain't no time like a TV time.
Kurt, I believe that the viewers, the users of TV time, have given this episode a 5 out of 5. What do you think?
Actually, here's the thing, right? I feel like they should not give it a 5 out of 5, but there is a level of survivorship bias that comes with TV time, right? Like, if they're this far along and they're still rating it, like, either they're hate watching it at this point or they've fallen off the series. You know what I mean? So given kind of like the great sieve, I think, yeah, you're right. 5.
It is 5. 43% said 5.
Ooh, how many said 4?
23%. That's not a lot.
Ooh, yeah. What's the spread here then?
18% on 3 stars, 9% on 2 stars, 7% on 1 star.
Not a good finale. At least not. No. The people don't like the finale.
previously the highest percentage on one star had been 3%. This was 7%.
They're not happy.
I guess not.
From the street, they're tomassing it.
Tomas.
Speaking of Tomas, favorite character. Is he a playable character?
No, he's not a playable character. Shame. I know. Neither is Laskin, because Laskin probably would have been my pick here. But I guess that you went with Elena. I guess the people went also with Elena.
You said Elena. The people said Elena.
I did. And as they did. Yep. 85% said Elena.
Fair enough. I wouldn't give it to Herbert. Honestly, I probably still wouldn't give it to Mr. Laskin just because he's not around enough.
No, it is Elena. It definitely is. I mean, she's frantic in the beginning. She's nostalgic and disappointed at the end. She's, kind of a shell of herself at the end.
She shows some political intrigue, understanding Mr. Laskin's play.
Yep. So it's political savvy. There's sacrifice. Like she's it's Elena easily.
Yeah.
Although 3% did vote for Agnes.
Oh, the in memoriam vote, the big what happened to Oscar vote. Yeah,
that's the what happened to Oscar vote. That's right.
Where is Oscar?
So I think I will stick with a 9 for this episode. I think there is a lot that I do like about it. But the series as a whole, very flawed, still entertaining, still moments of real intrigue and heightened emotions, but lots of flaws along the way too.
I agree that the series is flawed, but I don't think the finale, it exemplifies those flaws. It doesn't, I guess, aid in it. For example,
right,
I said we don't really root for these characters. I would have been fine seeing their downfall completely. And in a way we see
her downfall. 100%.
But not entirely, yeah. Right? She's still in the palace, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, just loose ends that the way they stop the stories bothers me, especially Oscar. I don't mind if I don't see the rest of the tricky trio, but it's just kind of, I guess something that also bothers me, which I'd be fine with if I had other information like Oscar or something else, but like, what's the state of her government now? You know, like what is, I guess I'm just curious, like what are their policies? Like who's advising her? Like just what's going on?
Well, you live in America, you know our policies. Those are their policies now. Exactly. And they eat a lot of salmon.
All they have is salmon. Now we took out all the meat.
Oh, dear.
I'm going to stick with the 8.
Okay. All right. And I'll stick with the 9. Folks, we are done covering the regime episode by episode, but next week we will have our recap episode where we will run through our favorite episodes down to our least favorite episodes. I guess we'll go backwards, least favorite up to our favorites. We'll give out some character superlatives. We'll talk about our favorite titles and our least favorite titles. I think we might talk about the deaths in the series, the 4 big deaths in the series. So we may as well throw that in. So it's always a good time on the recap episodes. So give that a listen next week. After that, I should mention that alongside the regime, we've already mentioned we are covering Severance. So we're five episodes deep into that coverage. Next week, we'll have episode 6 coverage and just have 3 more episodes of that plus a recap. Right after Severance, we'll be going into Outer Range season 2. We've already covered season 1. So watch that, catch up on that, listen to our coverage of Outer Range, and that'll prep you just right for the second season of that, which drops on Prime mid-May. After the regime, though, we have an idea of what we're covering, but it's not set in stone yet, so I don't want to announce anything yet.
You'll learn next week. Yeah.
Yes, we will make the announcement then. So, folks. Oh, well, actually, Kurt.
Yes.
What else would you like to say about this episode?
Disappointing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed with the series as a whole. I don't know if it's because of this episode, though, but at any rate. Folks, email us, showhopperspodcast@gmail.com. You can give us those 5-star ratings and reviews. We appreciate so much. Subscribe, follow, download, like, share. Oh, sharing is the best.
That's the key.
Please share with folks out there. People who don't know about Showhoppers, make them know about Showhoppers, because you're in my world now. You listen to me.
Yes, threaten the listener. That's a good idea. We haven't tried that one yet.
Well, I think it works. It's a podcast, right? Listen to me. But yeah. But unfortunately, that is all we have for the regime. Time to go freshen up and make your peace with it.
Shoehammer some Showhoppers into your day.